despite what our propaganda outlets tell us. And there's no need to act irrationally. Good news, and that's exactly what the Prime Minister is saying this morning. Keep calm and carry on.
Magic Mornings with Sanderson Vitamins, supporting year-round health and well-being.
Mornings with Peter Williams.
0800 844 747.
Magic Talk.
It's 25 to 10. Tony, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, Tony?
Well, just listening to your discussion about climate change and the climate campaigners, I'm quite happy that certainly seems over here is quite a different attitude to in the UK, where it's almost like a kind of cult-like movement around this Greta Thunberg, and everyone seems to be, almost everyone seems to be behind it, and certainly the press is very much behind it. I mean, I'm quite sceptical about it all, really, and I suppose I do come with some, you know, insight in that. If you look at where this Extinction Rebellion movement came from, I'm not quite sure how big is it over here.
Extinction Rebellion had a little bit of an impact late last year. They had a demonstration in Wellington where a few of them glued themselves to some boats in the middle of the street and they held up the traffic. But really, it's just been the one day of protests, and they were pretty widely derided, to be fair.
Okay.
And nobody paid too much attention to them.
Yeah, in London, it was obviously that, you know, this went around the world, didn't it, I think?
This was about October last year, I think. Yeah, it was part of that worldwide movement.
Climbing onto tube trains, which didn't seem to be the cleverest thing to do, you know, having a go at public transport, which, is, by the way, is the solution to pollution, in case they didn't quite realise. But anyway, I mean, I'm from Bristol and also have relatives in Stroud, which are the two cities where this Extinction Rebellion movement grew up, apparently. And, you know, I've seen Greta came to Bristol to give a speech just last week and left the Central College Green an absolute muddy mess because there was a bit of rain around. And so she kind of, you know, didn't do a lot for the environment there, and her speech was rather slow. But I think where this has come from, I think we've got to look into who are the ideologues, who are the people who are coming up with the thoughts and the ideas that the Extinction Rebellion people are then going with, because this is not just a kind of grassroots movement, I don't think. There are leaders to it, and that there are specific messages coming out. And one of those is a chap called George Monbiot, you might have heard of. He's a Guardian columnist. And I just don't really trust the guy, because I worked with him personally, and I had even had the keys to his house for about 2 years when I was working very closely with him in environmental movements in Britain, in Oxford, in the 1990s. And many of the people who were working with George were absolutely gobsmacked in the late 90s, early noughties, when he came out as pro-nuclear power. Now, none of us environmentalists were pro-nuclear power and, pro-nuclear
I have heard of this guy. He writes regularly in The Guardian, and I used to read his stuff regularly, and then I thought, I just can't stand this guy anymore because you know from which direction he's coming. But why did he change his tune on nuclear power, Tony?
Well, that's a really good question. None of us could actually really get an answer out of him. He was saying, oh, well, actually, the nuclear is, you know, potentially is going to make it so we don't have to rely on fossil fuels anymore. And you were saying, well, look, hang on a minute. You know, what about all the waste? I mean, we've got this problem in the UK now. You know, massive amounts of plutonium was produced in these nuclear power stations. Great, wonderful, and that's what they really wanted it for. But now we've got this horrific legacy of nuclear waste. What are you going to do with it? You know, are you going to slide it between the plates of the Earth? Are you going to shoot it into the sun? Because it's really never going to go away. Basically, they've got a massive, massive, incredibly expensive problem. And the Germans have made a sensible decision. And they say, well, we're just not going to do this anymore.
It's crazy. But hang on, what about in France, though, Tony? Because isn't the majority of electricity in France generated from nuclear power sources? And they don't have any issues there, do they?
Well, they definitely have. Of course, they have the same issues with the waste. You can't do anything with this really nasty, highly radioactive stuff, which stays radioactive for tens of thousands of years. What are you going to do with it? But anyway, so that was really George went off in this very strange direction. And there were one or two of his friends who went off with him in that direction. But most of us just decided, look, this guy is not really an environmentalist. And he is, you know, when you look at the Extinction Rebellion protests in London, there he is up on the stage doing his speeches. You know, I mean, as an individual, he's a really nice guy, you know, I'd say. And he's also done some very good articles for The Guardian. He's done one recently on the Boris Johnson trying to get rid of the gypsies in Britain. I mean, this is a new bit of legislation that's coming along in the next couple of years, and he's going to try and basically criminalise being a gypsy or a traveller, which, I mean, there are tens of thousands of gypsies and travellers. So George has done a fantastic article on that. But when it comes to the environment and energy, and of course this is a massive, massive global industry, probably the biggest global industry in terms of money, George, I'm afraid, is absolutely hopeless. So I don't trust this Extinction Rebellion, which is he's one of the ideological leaders of.
And this is the organisation that says the world's going to be almost extinct by the end of the century, and our population, the world's population, is going to drop from 7 billion or 8 billion down to 1 billion. He says, or Roger Hallam, who's one of the other founders of it, says it's going to be a major drop in the world's population, a significant drop, almost an extinction-level drop in the world's population within the next 80 or 90 years, which, frankly, I believe is just absolute nonsense, as are so many other predictions that these people are making. But tell me this, Tony, you say you're visiting from the UK. The UK, in fact, had the first piece of climate change legislation in the world, and you brought that in about 2008. Does the population in the UK, does it express any scepticism at all, or has that all been shut down completely by the press and the media? Because I know how the BBC reports this issue, that's for sure.
Well, look, the BBC is not the British people by any means. In fact, they've gone off in a completely different direction. No, I mean, most Brits, I think, are very sceptical about it, but that isn't always expressed in the media. What you find, for example, in our local paper, the Bristol Post, is you'll find a whole load of articles saying, you know, with all of the worst of the trolls, if you want, you know, the internet trolls, saying, oh, Greta Thunberg, go home, we hate you, you're a troll, this sort of thing. And you know, that there's an article all about how nasty all of these people have been to Greta, but there is really no intellectual, rigorous examination by the media of this movement. I've seen very, very little, and certainly none linking it to the attempt by the energy industry to control what post-oil energy, as the oil runs out, is going to look like. And I think that's actually really what's mainly behind this. And, you know, it's interesting you're talking about George Orwell, because, of course, he worked for the BBC in the Second World War for the World Service, and he resigned because he said, look, the propaganda doesn't work. And there's a letter, you can find it on the BBC website, actually, online, where he wrote a letter saying, look, the propaganda you're getting me to do in India is counterproductive. It's not going to work. And then he went off and wrote several more novels before he died of tuberculosis, you know, after the war.
Indeed. So tell me, Tony, what are you doing in New Zealand? Are you just on holiday? I noticed you're in Thames, which is very much a place where environmental activity has been well reported over the years, as you're probably aware. So it's very much in the heart of the Coromandel environmental movement.
I'm not really much aware of the movement around here, but I can tell you it's a very conducive environment. You know, I think one of the big things I notice is that people don't rush around so much in New Zealand as they do in the UK. They don't seem to, I mean, obviously where we are in Coromandel, there seems to be quite a lot of retired people, but it just seems that there is a more of a respectful attitude towards the environment here. For example, you know, when you're driving along, you'll find there's a little place you can stop to have a cup of tea out of your thermos flask in the car and have a wander around in, you know, along these little trails. That's a lot more provision here for that sort of thing, for people to actually go and enjoy the environment than in the UK. Which is, you know, there is a real, I mean, there's a denuding of the infrastructure in Britain. There has been for at least the last sort of 20, 30 years, slowly but surely. What the government is doing to look after our shared spaces, common land and all whatever, that sort of thing, and public footpaths, public rights of way, has just been going down and down, because most of the money we pay in tax seems to be going on to pay off debt rather than to actually do what it's supposed to do, which is to care for our nation.
Indeed. And what about your electricity generation? I know about a year ago, possibly a little bit less than that, there was a big play being made how Britain went for days and days and days without generating any carbon or fossil fueled electricity. The irony of that was, of course, you were importing it from over the North Sea from Holland, where they had been generating it by coal and gas. But what is Britain going to do long term for its electricity generation?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, one of the things they've done in 2010, when Cameron came along, when the Tories took over from Gordon Brown, is they swapped all the subsidies for solar power, because what would have been happening is people had been getting subsidies to put a solar panels on their roof, you know, south-facing roofs. And so we started to see loads of houses getting these solar panels. The Tories switched that completely and really cut the subsidies to householders to give the subsidies to landowners. So what we see now is these enormous great solar farms, which is an entire farm which could be used for, you know, growing food, now being used just as a solar farm with a CCTV all around it, barbed wire fences, and goodness knows what. But I mean, that doesn't seem to me to be a very good way to do it. If you know, the idea that people can generate their own solar power is much better, I think, than, you know, you're just buying into the energy industry again. You know, that the big landowners are benefiting rather than people who can maybe not, you know, have trouble paying their bills. But yeah, I mean, I personally think we should be using some coal power to generate. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the miners' strikes in the 1980s, which was an enormous battle with Margaret Thatcher, and the miners' strike was a political thing. I mean, they had the security services infiltrating the unions and basically destroyed, without any kind of proper public debate, just destroyed the coal industry, shut it all down, and put loads of skilled workers on the dole. I mean, living in Bristol, we're quite close to South Wales. We went to visit one of these museums where there's still some of the miners around. You know, if anyone is in South Wales visiting the UK, it's very worth going and see this place. It's called Big Pit. And there are some of the old miners that used to work down the mines there. And I asked them the question, one of the guys, the question. I said, well, look, you know, are you glad the mines closed? Because it must have been a horrible, dirty job. And one of the guys said, yes, we were. The other guy, though, he said, well, look, my grandfather and my father worked for decades to get good conditions in the mines to make it safe down there. And as soon as we got good pay and we had safe conditions, they then came in the 1980s and closed the whole thing down. So I still think there's a future in coal, but not if George Monbiot and Extinction Rebellion have their way.
Indeed. All right, Tony, fascinating conversation. Thank you for your perspective from the other side of the world during a visit to New Zealand. It's 13 to 10. Magic Talk, back in a moment.
The Ryan Bridge Drive Show. Turn up the conversation. Magic Talk.
Hi, Stu.
Apparently there's some pro-life rally at Parliament, and they might be holding up some photos of aborted babies or something.
You're calling about abortion. Are you an abortion campaigner, Stu?
I'm calling about free speech.
I'm not saying never discuss abortion, but I just don't want to do it today. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Why didn't you listen to his point about free speech?
Well, it wasn't on topic was the thing.
So it depends on what you want to talk about. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's my show.
Yeah, hi, Ryan. Hey, listen, that lady was completely out of line there. I thought you were quite fair with the guy. He came in off topic. All fair play to you, I reckon.
Thank you, Ian. Cheers. God, this is bizarre. What are we doing? Hey, the news quiz. Forget about all of this abortion stuff. Well, I mean, don't forget about abortion. Oh, jeepers, now I'm in it. This is why I didn't want to go here.
The Ryan Bridge Drive Show, 4 till 7 p.m. weekdays. Magic Talk.
Summer is a great time to get on top of those niggly jobs around the house. Work smarter, not harder, with a We Can Forget product and get the job done now.
Looking for a place right by the water with a short walk to the main street? Richmond Villas offers this and so much more. With beautiful gardens, it's so peaceful, established, and has a great community feel. Richmond Villas are built to the highest standard with all the amenities you'll ever need. Make the move and make friends for life at Richmond Villas. Call to view on 0800 868 5484. That's 0800 868 5484.
Peter Williams, Magic Talk.
All right, it's 9 minutes before 10, 0800 844 747. So, are you actually making any significant changes to your lifestyle because you're worried about the impact of humanity on the climate? Have you, for instance, bought an electric car? Are you thinking of buying an electric car? Do you have the ability to take the bus more? Do you therefore take the bus more? Do you ride a bike more? Do you take a train more often? Have you reduced or completely stopped eating meat? Are you flying less? Are you actually prepared to make any changes? Are you one of the 40% of Aucklanders who say that you're prepared to make radical changes to your lifestyle? Are you part of the next 42% of Aucklanders who are prepared to make a moderate change to your lifestyle? So therefore, according to the survey, 82% of Aucklanders are prepared to make a radical or a moderate change to their lifestyle. That's quite a lot of people. But the problem is just exactly what are you going to do and what do you call a moderate change to your lifestyle? Anyway, from the text line, if I sell my car to buy an electric car, someone else will just be driving it. Yes, that's the logic. Good morning, Peter. You're all wrong. Climate change is due to pirates or lack of them. If you look at the statistics, pirate numbers were high in the 17th and 18th century and steadily have reduced towards the 19th and 20th centuries. And global temperatures have increased from the 19th and 20th centuries. So start pirating now for the sake of the planet. Thank you, Carl the Truckee. Bit of homespun wisdom there, mate. You've got it right. Hi, Peter. With our taxes, small businesses are being boycotted and goods purchased overseas with free shipping options, small business miss out. Plastic wrapped, flown, and quality often poor. Often the simplest changes are the biggest changes. How green is a hybrid really? It depends on what kind of hybrid it is, I guess. Tony, thank you for that text. If it's a plug-in hybrid, then, Tony, I guess it is far more available or far more likely to use electricity above speeds of, what, 30 or 40 k's per hour, whereas the other hybrids, the Toyota Prius or Prius or whatever, that basically has its battery charged once you get above town speeds, doesn't it? So I think when you're, what is it, under 30 or under 40 k, you've got the battery running. As soon as you get above that, you're charging the battery and you're using the gas, but it means that your gas consumption is very low. So if you're driving around town, then you don't use as much gas as you would with a full internal combustion engine. That's an old theory which has been around for years now, hasn't it? They're pretty popular, those prices, and everybody who's ever taken an Uber will have had a ride in a Toyota Prius. 5 to 10. Bruce, good morning.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm good, mate. What's up?
Oh, you're always saying that. That British man you talked to before, that was very interesting. Great. I'd like to just add something that I saw a while back on a television documentary about Bill Gates, his foundation. You probably know a little about this. His foundation decided to attack three world problems. One of them, of course, was the business of malaria, which they pretty well wiped out. He used drones and stuff in Africa to track down or the places, and the only place he couldn't get to in the end was some part of West Africa where there was war going on. I think they finally did it. The other problem was to do with having some sort of sanitary toilets in villages that couldn't afford the type of sewage systems we have in our towns, you know, the expensive sewage systems. But the third one was this business of free or very cheap energy sources. And he got all these brain boxes together, and they worked on using up nuclear waste. Now there are parts of America, like South Carolina and towns where there's these massive dumps of this stuff on the outskirts of these towns, and these smarties worked out a way of using this material without the need for where we could slow down the reactiveness of it so that it didn't develop this heat problem, but it could still produce energy from the material itself and virtually burn it out and turn it into nothing.
But was there not waste afterwards? Because you remember our friend Tony from the UK a short time ago talking about how nuclear waste remains radioactive for 10,000 years.
That's right. Well, that's what I'm alluding to. And the problem with this stuff is that that's the problem with it. What do you do with it? Do you shoot it out in space or do you bury it? But these guys had figured out a way of building reactors that would burn it slowly so that you didn't have the massive problem
Fukushima.
Fukushima and stuff.
But the Fukushima, let's face it, the Fukushima catastrophe was caused by the earthquake and the tsunami, wasn't it? The world has not had many nuclear accidents, has it?
No, that's true. I agree.
We know about Chernobyl, and we know that the death rate there was hugely overstated as well. In fact, it was probably overstated in that TV series last year. That's the issue with the modern world. You watch a documentary and you see that all these things look to be the solution to many of the world's problems, but in actual fact, the documentary maybe has just oversimplified matters a bit. Hey, Bruce, thanks for that, mate. Thanks for bringing that aspect into the conversation this morning here on Magic Talk. We are back after the news. It's now 10 o'clock.
Across New Zealand, on radio, on Rover, and online, powered by NewsHub, this is Magic News.
From NewsHub at 11 o'clock, banks will be encouraged to reach out to troubled businesses affected by the coronavirus. The Prime Minister's met with her Business Advisory Council. The meeting comes as a third case of COVID-19 is confirmed here, but it's not the partner of an Auckland woman who earlier tested positive.